tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we are speaking with Dr. Jennifer Conrad. Dr. Conrad loves cats. As an advocate for animals, she is very interested in securing their well-being. It is out of this love that she founded the Paw Project, the world's largest nonprofit entirely dedicated to ending the cruel practice of declawing. Trained as a wild and exotic animal veterinarian, Dr. Conrad met many declawed big cats like tigers, lions, cougars, and leopards. When she witnessed their suffering, she and veterinary surgeons worked out a paw salvage surgery to help alleviate the pain and pathology that occurs in declawed paws. Soon after, she proved the successful results of the surgery in exotic cats. Dr. Conrad shifted to also helping little declawed domestic cats, gathering all the peer-reviewed literature on declawing to prove the case against the unnecessary surgery that amputates healthy toe bones. Dr. Conrad and the Paw Project team have been behind all the legislation in North America to ban declawing. They have worked to educate American and Canadian veterinarians on the facts, armed with proof that declawing doesn't help cats or humans. The Paw Project is leading the charge to make the veterinary profession claw-friendly. Dr. Conrad loves books, art, classical piano, and the ocean, but her favorite thing is still cats. Dr. Conrad, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Stacey, for having me.
So tell me a little bit. You were on our show, I think it was quite a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 or even more years ago at this point, and we talked about the Paw Project. For many of our listeners, we'll have in the show notes the past show that we did, but for those that are new to Paw Project, can you just share a little more about your organization?
Sure. The Paw Project is a nonprofit, and we advocate for cats keeping their claws. We are all veterinarians, and we know what declawing really is, which, in case the listeners don't understand, it is called declawing, but it really should be called de-knuckling. It is the amputation of the last bone in a cat's toes in order to remove the claw. Our nails grow from skin, but cat claws grow from bone. And so in order to remove the claw, you have to remove the bone. And I don't care what your veterinarian tells you on about how he or she declaws and how it's just a little tiny bit of bone or whatever, it is cruel. It is an amputation at the joint, or at least supposedly at the joint, to remove the claws. So we work as all veterinarians to change the profession to stop declawing. But what we really need is for the communities to say to veterinarians, I don't want to go to you as a veterinarian if you declaw, because clearly you are not an advocate for cats.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, who came up with this whole concept of declawing cats? Has it been around for a long period of time, or is it relatively new, I guess, from the 1970s on? I would call that new.
Well, it's actually what happened was there was a veterinarian who was born in Canada but practiced in Chicago area, and he wrote a letter to the Journal of the AVMA, just a letter to the editor. So it's not peer reviewed. It's not ethically considered, none of it. And he talks about using pentobarbital, which is what you kill animals with when it's time to euthanize them, to put these cats under and then chopping their toes off with a dog nail clipper. And he is so oblivious to how much pain that causes. He says they're fine after the surgery, which obviously they're not. Anyway, that's in 1952. He writes this letter. And then he takes it on a dog and pony show where he tries to get people to do it. And in the United States and Canada, it takes off. But when he takes it to England, the British say, no, that's animal cruelty and you're a sadist. So it never takes off anywhere else but in North America, where the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, supports it. and lets him go to veterinary shows to do his demonstrations where they, it's just so cruel what they did. And it took off because it's a moneymaker. In fact, we know in this day and age, it is still a $1 billion a year business, and still 22% of American cats are declawed. We know this. We know that more and more veterinarians are giving it up, but the unethical veterinarians who will still do it, they're doing more declaws and making more money. So that's why it just has to be illegal.
So many of our listeners know I am extremely passionate about spaying and neutering cats. And you just said this is a $1 billion business and we have a veterinary shortage going on. We have exhausted veterinarians. We don't have capacity for spay and neuter appointments. And I just see that $1 billion, if it was redirected from the declawing procedure into spay and neuter resources, we would probably have a pretty solid jump on our pet overpopulation situation in the United States.
It's true, but the veterinarians who are declawing, the reason it's a $1 billion business is because they're advocating for it, because it takes about 10, 11 minutes to declaw a cat, and they charge anywhere between $300 and $1,600 to do it. So it's very much a moneymaker for these veterinarians. So I don't think that they're going to redirect it to spay and neuter. I think they're supersizing spay and neuter by adding it on and then capitalizing on how much more money they can charge for a spay and neuter.
Interesting. Very interesting. If they knew how to do a 6-minute spay, like Dr. Long teaches folks in the high quality, high volume spay neuter techniques, and they could do a 6-minute spay, many veterinarians do charge about $600 to up to $1,000 for a spay procedure. So I try to find a business direction that might make more sense for folks. But again, declawing is definitely, it's a cruel practice and it's not something that we want to encourage. But if I'm always about trying to find the carrots that make people move. And speaking of that, you have also been very involved in the legislation of having declawing become illegal in communities, in states. How has that process worked and how many states have declawing as an illegal practice?
Yes, making it illegal is really the only way to stop people from doing it. But just back to the other point, I just want the listeners to know that veterinarians who don't declaw actually make more money than veterinarians who do. The reason that they make more money is people are searching for a humane veterinarian. They're searching for someone they can trust, and they're searching for someone who, if their cat was in the hospital, it would not get accidentally declawed, which happens all the time. It's such a routine procedure for vets who declaw. They very often will do a spay and start the declaw before realizing it that they weren't supposed to be declawing that cat. So that's another reason why we should only support veterinarians who do not declaw. Now, in regard to legislation, we have passed good, strong bills in the state of New York and the state of Maryland and many cities where declawing is banned across the United States, something like 20 cities. We've also been able to convince 9 out of the 10 provinces in Canada to stop declawing. The only one that still declaws is Ontario, which is unfortunately the biggest province, but they're working on it. The legislation is complicated because the veterinary medical associations, which are the trade associations for each state or city or wherever they are, will fight to not allow a ban on declawing. Again, it is a moneymaker, and the trade associations are interested in the bottom line for veterinarians, meaning they want to make sure they make the most money possible.
Very interesting. So tell us a little bit about the journey in New York. I remember seeing some of this, the stories, the reporting. Was that process of getting that legislation passed as you expected, or what were the new things you learned by getting a bill proposed and working with state senators to get a bill sponsored and have it go through the House and the Senate? And that process, it really, I'm not much in the advocacy space. And so it amazes me how much time and energy and effort has to be put in to an initiative to get some legislation passed. When you first went into this process and then when it closed, what were your takeaways from that?
Well, it's an interesting process to propose legislation because the very number one thing that you have to do is have an author of the bill. So a senator, assembly member who believes that declawing should be illegal. And that person has to be absolutely sure that he or she will not accept amendments, because what will happen is that the Veterinary Medical Association will try and throw out these amendments that are really exceptions that will swallow the rule. For instance, they'll throw out an amendment that, oh, you can't declaw unless the person who wants the cat declawed is afraid of being scratched because they're on Coumadin, or that person's got there's a baby in the household, or there's an old person in the household, thin skin, whatever the reason. So these poison pills that the Veterinary Medical Association will throw out sound reasonable to legislators. And then if the bill passes with that poison pill in it, then it's an exception that will swallow the rule. And all the veterinarian has to do is say, oh, Mrs. Johnson, are you afraid of being scratched by your cat? And then Mrs. Johnson says, no, actually, I'm not. But then the veterinarian says, well, you have to be afraid of getting scratched by your cat if I'm going to declaw this cat. And then Mrs. Johnson says, oh, yes, 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 I'm very afraid of being scratched by the cat. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. We get it. And then the cat gets declawed so that the bill has done nothing. And this is what is happening across the country, is these veterinary medical associations are trying to throw in impediments to the very strong language that we write to ban declawing so that they have this loophole that they can exploit and cats will still get declawed.
Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com. Mark your calendar. It's happening this Saturday. Join us this Saturday to learn the art of trap neuter return, a powerful way to transform the lives of community cats. Brought to you by Community Cats Podcast and Neighborhood Cats. This session is for anyone who wants to turn their passion for cats into action. Whether you're a seasoned caretaker or just starting out, there's something for everyone to learn. Don't wait. Reserve your spot now at communitycatspodcast.com/get TNR certified. Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now.
I started volunteering with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society back in 1996, and I was handling all the intakes and we were doing adoptions. I was pretty much involved in the operations of an adoption center day to day. And we usually always had 5 cats that had been declawed. And we even, upon occasion, would have some purebred cats that were declawed on the front and the back that would pass through our doors and be put up for adoption. And at one point, I had a conversation with a person about how it was fine to let a declawed cat outside because they can climb up the tree backwards using their back legs instead of their forelegs. Now, I understand these are all incredibly, I think, disturbing numbers from even back in the 90s. But I will say that now, 30 years later, at least in the area where I'm involved, we're seeing fewer declaws. Are there statistics out there about the absolute or number of cats that are being declawed across the country?
Yeah, it's 22% of American cats. And if you assume that there are about 100 million cats in homes, so That's 22 million, whether you see them or not. So what's happening now, Stacey, which is even more disgusting, is that people who declaw their cats are ashamed that they did it when they no longer want the cat, because declawed cats, absolutely, in the literature, peer-reviewed literature, they bite more and they use the litter box less. They bite more because they have no other way to defend themselves. They use the litter box less because it hurts to dig in the box. When they come home from the surgery, they go to use the box. It hurts. And they say, I'm never using it again. Even if their paws begin to heal, they still feel that way. So these cats lose their home. But what's happening is now people who declaw the cats are ashamed to dump them into a shelter, knowing that they were the ones who were so cruel as to declaw them. So they're taking them to the vet and having them killed. That's why shelters don't see as many numbers as you would imagine is 22%. But it's because of the vets who declawed the cats are killing them.
Very interesting. It is funny because back in the, even before the 90s, I guess the shelter was considered more of the place where most of the euthanasia of our companion animals, our cats, were taking place. Now it seems like we hear a lot more about the private practice veterinarians. We hear about their mental stress, distress, compassion fatigue, moral distress, whole range. Economic euthanasia is another term. This sounds like a convenience euthanasia, and also an injured cat through no fault of their own. And it's not a reason to euthanize a cat, but there are a lot of multiple factors here, but it seems like our private practice veterinarians must be euthanizing more cats than they have ever done before. Would you agree with that statement?
Well, I don't know what's happening, to tell you the truth, because I know that the veterinarians I know would be absolutely distraught having to kill an animal when it's not euthanasia. You know, that euthanasia means a good death, meaning you're helping an animal because it's suffering so much. The word euthanasia is often misused, because when you're killing an animal for convenience, that's just killing. That is not helpful to the animal. And I like to tell people, if you're at all confused about these things in veterinary medicine, then don't say it's a compassionate thing that you're doing, because compassion has this wide berth where you can be compassionate when you declaw. You can compassionately kill an animal. Use empathy. And if empathy is what you are guiding yourself by, then you know that you can't, with empathy, kill an animal for convenience. You can't, with empathy, declaw an animal. So if empathy is the guide, we would never declaw. We would never use convenience euthanasia. If empathy was the guide, these things wouldn't exist.
Right. 100% agree with you on that topic for sure. I want to make sure, before we get tight on time, you've been involved in a recent documentary. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So there's a new documentary. It's called American Cats: The Good, the Bad, and the Cuddly. And it's an interesting process because it's a comedian. Her name is Amy Hoggart. She's interested in America's relationship to cats. Because, as you know, a lot of Americans and British and Canadians are cat crazy. And so she wants to follow the relationship in the United States with cats. And she stumbles upon what declawing is, and she cannot believe that Americans do this to cats. And so she follows the money as to why would we be declawing 22% of American cats. I'm proud to be part of it. I hope it makes a difference, because the bottom line is that the reason that we declaw cats is it is a $1 billion a year business for veterinarians.
I want to take a step back. You know, I'm a little bit shocked by the percentage of cats that are declawed. Many of the folks that listen to this show take care of cats that are outside. And I would assume most of us have run into cats that were declawed that were living outside, either as part of a colony or a household who's let the cat go indoor, outdoor. If somebody comes across a cat that is declawed, what is your recommendation on how do we handle that cat?
Well, my recommendation is if you come across a community cat and it's a declawed cat, that cat lost its home, most likely because it was either biting people in the household, because that's what declawed cats do, or it wasn't using the litter box. And so people threw it outside. So those two behaviors have to do with being declawed. What I have found is that a declawed cat, if given proper pain management, can become 100% good on the litter box again. It still might bite because they have no other way to defend themselves. So, you know, you would want to say, don't let the kids play too aggressively with that cat. But with pain management, the cat could probably go back inside and use the litter box. And the other thing is that we have this salvage surgery that we've started doing on cats where we try and correct the problems, the infections and the bone shards, and that sometimes there's nail growing underneath the skin because they didn't clip the bone enough to get rid of the nail growing tissue. So these are the problems that require surgery and pain management, and we can get those cats back into a home. And I think that's the best thing for them because they really can't protect themselves, and they cannot. If they can climb a tree, then that's out of sheer luck, because without claws, it's very hard for a cat to climb a tree, even with the back claws. So I would say get those cats, trap them, get them inside, get x-rays of their paws, contact the Paw Project, which is pawproject.org. And we can direct you to a veterinarian who knows how to do the salvage procedure to get that cat back into a home.
And lastly, have you ever run into a situation where a cat was declawed but not spayed or neutered?
Oh, absolutely. After Katrina hit New Orleans, I went to rescue animals, and we had two cats who were declawed on all four, but not spayed or neutered.
That's amazing.
Well, I think just when you think about that, how is this possible? But, you know, a veterinarian was behind that, and a veterinarian agreed to declaw all four paws, but not spay and neuter. So this is why it just has to be illegal to declaw.
Yeah. And are there certain parts of the country where declawing is more prevalent? I mean, I understand that there's Maryland and New York, but is the South or the West, or are there specific states where it seems like there's more declawing?
No, believe it or not. Yeah, you're absolutely right. In the South, they do declaw for sure. But in a lot of the South, they believe an animal has the right to protect itself, like its own little Second Amendment. So they leave the claws on and the cats are going to be outside. But in the Midwest, there are many apartment complexes that require declawing as a condition of tenancy. And also there are many veterinarians who throw it in on a kitten package in the Midwest. So for instance, places like Indiana and Ohio and certainly Kansas and even up higher up like Minnesota and Wisconsin, lots and lots of Nebraska, lots of cats declawed. And in Indiana, one of my Paw Project veterinarians bought a practice, and it turned out that 80% of her patients were declawed.
Wow. That just blows me away, unfortunately. I mean, it shows how we could all be part of one country, but we're so far away from each other in having consensus on this topic. And I really do hope that we are able to spread the word faster. What are your goals going forward for the Paw Project over the next 3 to 5 years?
My goals are to make it illegal in the United States and the rest of Canada. And what I would hope is that every one of the people who's listening to this, who obviously loves cats and loves your show, I'm hoping that they call up their veterinarians and say, do you declaw? And if the answer is yes, they say, could you please recommend a humane veterinarian for me to go to? Because I will not go to a veterinarian who declaws. I cannot support this practice. And on this alone, I will pull my cats out of your hospital and go to a veterinarian who has the backbone to say, no, I'm not going to do something wrong just for money.
And if we happen to have any connections with our local political officials, I'm always trying to be as proactive as possible, even though there might not be some pending legislation. it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to shoot them an email and just say, hey, are you aware that there's a trend where decline is being banned state to state? And just want to let you know, as a member of the community, that I would support such an initiative.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. The only thing that I want to caution people on is that they should go to the Paw Project, again, pawproject.org, and get sample legislation, because otherwise, if you have the council for that member write a bill without having any concept, they might include that you can declaw a cat if you have a baby in the house or an old person or thin skin or on medicine, which is basically everyone. So you have to exclude that language, so that best way to do it is to start with the Paw Project, and we can help you with sample legislation so that we don't have to oppose a ban because it has such bad language.
Dr. Conrad, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I hope that everyone out there is inspired to do whatever they can to stop declawing, because, you know, in all the issues that we face with cats, the one thing that we really could stop is declawing. We can do it if we band together, and we should band together. There, no one who loves cats loves declawing. So let's band together. Join us on pawproject.org. If you're looking for a veterinarian who's humane, pawproject.org has our list of no declaw veterinarians. Watch American Cats, The Good, The Bad, and The Cuddly. I'm hoping it will be streaming. It's going to be in theaters. Watch that movie, get inspired, and don't be afraid to tell at least 10 people what declawing is, because if people knew before their vet said it's not a big procedure, don't worry about it, if people knew that it was an amputation of a cat's toe bones, they wouldn't do it. So if you tell them before their vet says, don't worry, then at least they will look it up and see that it's wrong and realize that their vet is telling them something that's very harmful for their cat and totally unnecessary.
Excellent. Dr. Conrad, I'd like to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on my show, and I hope we'll have you on again in the future.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thanks for having me.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.